For the first time, U.S. subscribers can stream MLB Network 24/7, including select out-of-market games.
Swing and a drive. It's deep. It's gone. Yes!
Stream minor league affiliates.
Home run number one.
Portrait pick number one.
Plus, get MLB Big Inning and live audio for all 30 teams.
Baseball can't get better than this.
Experience the game like never before with MLB Network and At-Bat, your all-in-one baseball destination. Only $6.99 per month. Visit MLB.com/At-Bat for details. Blackout and other restrictions apply. MLB trademarks used with permission.
Back here on WEEI, I'm John Lyons. Following the Red Sox 4-1 loss to the Toronto Blue Jays, big thanks to Rob Bradford for joining us, breaking that down. We'll take your calls and texts on it. Also, though, do want to talk some Patriots. They had their preseason finale last night against the Washington Commanders. They lost 20-10, which, as we know in a preseason game, does not matter at all. Headline, Drake May, 13 of 20, 126 yards and a touchdown, especially on his first drive, despite there being issues at center and snapping issues. Looked really sharp. Drake May looked like a guy who not only has made a lot of progress since April, which he has, he looked like a guy who is just about ready, I think, to be an NFL starter. And you notice I say just about. I don't say that he should be a starter quite yet. And I have a couple reasons why. First is, so Drake May's getting better. He's progressing. That's a great thing for the future of the franchise. If you're a New England Patriots fan like I am, you should want the end of this season to walk away saying, I feel good about their future quarterback and I feel good about their head coach. Because as we saw for 20 years here, if you get those two things right, you can be a contender every year. If you get those things wrong, like we've seen for the past couple, especially quarterback, then you are going to be far, far out of it. So, yes, he's progressing. That's a great thing for the future of the franchise. Doesn't necessarily mean he's just ready to go, though. I mean, those snapping issues that we saw with Nick Leverett, you can tell me a lot of it's Nick Leverett's fault. I get it. But Drake May had snapping issues in practices. He had a fumbled snap against the Eagles. Now, another fumbled snap against the Commanders. Like, I'm not going to blame Drake May for that ground ball that got snapped back to him when he was in shotgun. No, that's on the center. But I am going to blame him, at least partially, for the multiple botched snaps from under center, right? Can't have that. So, again, not crushing him. It's something he's going to work on. He's going to get better at, right? Calling an offense. And when I say calling an offense, right, Van Pelt calls the play, but when you're huddling up, you have to digest that play call and then give it to your teammates. Not something he's used to. Not saying he can't do it. He's gotten better at it. That's a good thing. I want to see him continue to get better at it a little bit. So he's on the right track. But just because he's on the right track doesn't mean he's at the station yet and he's ready to play full time in week one. So just because he might not be there yet doesn't mean he's not going to be there at all during the season. But I just don't think he's there yet. And here's another huge piece to this, right? And I've been saying this for a long time. Okay? Look at the situation he's in. Because if you want to compare, because a lot of people say, oh, well, Caleb Williams is starting. Jaden Daniels, who quarterback for the Commanders, who didn't play last night, is going to be starting week one. Or, hey, Bo Nix is starting for the Broncos. Well, those are all completely different situations than where the Patriots are at. Like, if you're comparing the Patriots situation to the Broncos, to the Commanders, to the Bears, then it just, to me, that doesn't make a lot of sense. You look at the Bears. Okay, first of all, Caleb Williams, number one overall pick. He's got a first-round tackle in Darnell Wright on his right side. He's got Braxton Jones on his left side, the number 11 offensive line by PFF. He's got DJ Moore, Keenan Allen, Rome Odunze to throw to. Much, much better situation for a rookie quarterback, and one who, by the way, is more ready than May to begin with. Look at Jaden Daniels, who we saw last night. Now, his offensive line last year and coming into this year, similar situation to the Patriots. Commanders offensive line, not that good. They have three new starters. We'll see if they're any better, but not much better. But what he does have going for him, Cliff Kingsbury is his offensive coordinator. Now, you probably remember Cliff Kingsbury as the failed head coach of the Arizona Cardinals. He was a bad head coach. But he worked with Caleb Williams last year, seems to be a good offensive mind. He at least got some pretty good years, or I guess months because injuries, out of Kyler Murray, a guy that I don't have any faith in. And they have Terry McLaurin at wide receiver, Austin Eckler at running back, who I know is tailed off a little bit, but still a good, legit NFL running back. So at the very least, the offensive coordinator situation you feel better about there. You feel better about the receiver situation with Terry McLaurin. And not to mention, Jaden Daniels played 55 games in college to May's, what, 26 starts? And then Bo Nix. So the Broncos have the 15th-ranked O-line by PFF. Middle of the pack, better than the Patriots. Middle of the pack. They have Mike McGlinchey at offensive tackle, big free agent signing from last year. Started the year kind of rocky. As things progressed, got better. They have Sean Payton as head coach, too, who's proven for year after year after year when he was in New Orleans, he can get the most out of not just a quarterback like he did in Drew Brees, who's a Hall of Famer in his own right, but not just get the most out of a guy, but also get the most out of rosters, right? This is a coach that has won a Super Bowl before. So you look at the situation with Drake May, right? First of all, like I said, I think he's progressed a lot, and that's a great thing for the future of the Patriots. I don't think he's quite there yet to start week one. But you just look at the situation around him. The Patriots still need a little time. You can be frustrated by this if you want. I kind of am. But they still need some time to solidify how this offensive line is going to look. Alex Van Pelt hasn't called plays full-time since, what, 2009? 15 years? He needs to get his feet under him a little bit. You're going to have probably one rookie receiver in Jalen Polk starting or at least playing a heavy amount. Maybe give him a few weeks to get kind of his legs under him. And he's looked really good so far. So you need, I think, 4 or 5 weeks of this season just to get your operation at a point where it looks good. And when I say looks good, not, hey, you're scoring 30 points a game, but think about what we saw last night. I mean, Brissett gets sacked. It really gets smoked on that sack, gets injured. Hopefully nothing that'll keep him out too long. But then Drake May comes in, and he has that great run for a third down. Then the next snap, the center, Nick Leverett, gets pushed back into May on a handoff. Then you have a throw to Jalen Polk for a big second and two conversion, which is really good. Demario Douglas gets open on a third down conversion. Nice job by May. So you start to see some real positives built. But there's a couple negatives in there, but some positives built. You have the snap issues, but you're still building some positives. You score the touchdown from Kevin Harris. But then your next drive, you have a false start. You have a Demario Douglas catch negated by an illegal formation. The drive after that, negative run play on the first play, illegal formation, a miscommunication between the QB and the wide receiver for an incomplete pass. They punt. Next drive, more offensive line penalties, right? The two-minute drill drive, incomplete pass to Javon Baker deep, but I thought that was, you know, a nice play from Drake May. But then City So gets hurt. Then you have a nice completion to Baker for a first down on that curl route on the right side. Then you have a holding penalty right after that. Then you have a TD pass, which was, to me, I think Drake May's probably his best play of the entire summer, practice and games included, when he ran to his left, threw on the run, hit KJ Osborne for a touchdown, negated by penalty. Next play incomplete, drive killed. So you have a situation where your offense really, I mean, you just go through the game last night, you go through the game against the Eagles, I was at the joint practice against the Eagles. I was at some other practices as well. They have a difficult, difficult time just putting more than one good play in a row together. Like if they put two good plays in a row together, that's good. If they put three in a row together, I'm almost surprised. And that's where they're at. And I think that's a big part of the reason why, look, I want Drake May to be the future of this franchise. But I think also, you need to look at, hey, this guy needs to develop a little bit more in his own right, and the situation they have around him is such a problem. If they can just, and I'm not even telling you they have to get to a point where the offense is good, right? Notice I didn't say great. They don't even have to get to a point where the offense is good. If they can just get to a point where even this offense is operating at a competent level, like they're lining up correctly, offensive linemen aren't getting pushed back every play, your tackles aren't getting smoked, your running backs aren't missing. That's what happened on the Brissett sack. Like two offensive linemen ran into each other and a running back whiffed on a block. And boom, your quarterback gets smoked. Right? So like if you can just stop doing those things, how about KJ Osborne's drop on the deep throw from Jacoby Brissett when he tried to one-hand it? Use two hands, you probably catch that ball. Boom, big play. Right? So if you can just get to a point where you're operating competently, then I'd feel a lot better about playing Drake May. And I think they can get to that point during this season. It's not going to be week one. It hasn't been this preseason. It hasn't been at the it wasn't at the joint practice. It hasn't been throughout camp. So that's why, to me, I would love to see May play. I just don't think they're in a situation, both of his development and what's around him, to be able to play yet, to have him play yet. We do have a couple of you on the phone lines. We have some people on the text line as well. I know we're doing Patriots. We're also doing Red Sox. So if you want to call about either one, text about either one, that's fine. Let's go to David in Florida. He wanted to talk actually Red Sox about that. David, what do you got for us?
Hey, how are you?
Doing well, David. What do you got?
Anybody who is still willing to tolerate dumbass Devers is just idiotic, more idiotic than Devers himself. I have just, all he does is hit for power. But that is not, he is not a baseball player. I've done my best to give him leeway, to have some patience with him, but I have just had my fill. I'm not the only one out there. So Marloni and all you other buffoons who keep trying to exercise some patience, get over it. He is a cancer. And the fact that he's a leader on this team makes him a stage four cancer. He just sucks. To use one of my favorite words.
Yeah, right, David, thanks for the call. I appreciate it. I mean, he's expressing some frustration. I think a lot of Red Sox fans have. I think he's being a little too harsh on Devers, saying all he does is hit for power. I mean, he is hitting .293 this year. I mean, so he can do more than just hit for power. He does have 58 walks. But look, you look at the big three the Red Sox had when it was Betts, Bogarts, and Devers. They let Betts and Bogarts go. They kept Devers to kind of be the face of the next generation. I'm sure there's some people on Jersey Street that maybe wish it had been Mookie Betts. And that's not even against Devers. Devers, I think, again, I thought the call was being a little too harsh there. I think he's a great hitter all around. I think his defense has gotten better, but it's still not at a level I think it consistently should be at year to year to year. There's been far too many years over the last, say, 3-4 years where he starts out horrid defensively, gets better, but still, you had that bad start. So, again, I understand the frustration. I think you're being a little too harsh there. Jacob, we got any texts on the text line about either, well, Red Sox or Patriots? I'll take either one.
Yeah, so we have, let's see. Sadly, this is what it is. The ownership doesn't give a crap about winning. They're making money. It's just that simple.
I think, look, if you look at the free agent and trade pitchers available this past offseason, the fact that the Red Sox get none of them should be an indictment on that entire front office. Imagine where they'd be if they had a player like Dylan Cease who was available, or Corbin Burns who was available, or Seth Lugo who was available for a relatively affordable contract that Kansas City gave him. That's tough. And that's, I mean, you want to talk about ownership? They're going to have to really, for lack of a better term, they need to step up to the plate this offseason. Like, if you want to actually be relevant in a city that has a world champion Boston Celtics, an NFL team that, yeah, the Patriots are bad right now, but the NFL's king anyway. So if you want to be relevant against going up against that, I mean, you're going to have to actually win meaningful games in August and September. And it's, look, they did it in 2021. Other than that, they haven't done it since 2018. That's just unacceptable. And again, I go back to what was on the pitching market this offseason. Yamamoto was the big name. But there was a lot of great pitchers that moved this offseason, and the Red Sox got none of them. And they'd be in a much better place right now if they had even gotten one, let alone if they had gotten two of them. And I think you look at this offseason coming up, there's not going to be that level of pitchers available. I mean, Burns will be a free agent, but on the whole. But it's a, look, I don't want to say it's a make or break offseason, because I felt like I might have said that last year. And it's just, it's at the point now where, I mean, these young players aren't young anymore. Theo's now a consultant with ownership. Like, are you going to actually invest? It's a question worth answering. Jake, do we have one more text before we go to break?
So we got, let's see. Bad teams that can't win at home are not playoff teams.
Yeah, I would agree. I mean, we'd say 29 and 36 at home. That's brutal. Like, you can't be a playoff team if you're going to be below 500 at home all year in an MLB season. Like I said, we are talking Red Sox. We're talking Patriots. We're going to be joined by John Serenides of the New England Football Journal. And sorry to you, 603 texter, who hates my show. I'm going to be here for a whole nother 45 minutes doing this, and then I'm going to be here for another hour doing Red Sox pregame. So keep listening, and you can keep hating me as well. But right now, it's time to trend with Jacob Lassner.
The exclusive home for Patriots Monday and Friday.
Now, here's what's trending on WEEI.
The Red Sox were defeated by the Blue Jays just now. Nick Pivetta came away with the loss after surrendering 2 earned runs in 6 innings. The offense just could not get anything going today. The Red Sox home record now sits at 29-36. They currently sit 5 games outside of the third wild card spot. The Royals won today in the first half of their doubleheader. They're also waiting for that second game of the day. Alex Cora had this to say after the game.
I don't know. I mean, it's not happening right now, to be honest with you. This is kind of like, it's been going on for a while here, right? And, most of them, they haven't been in this situation before, right? And, every pitch matters, every bat matters, we just got to make sure we slow it down, And I don't know if it's pressure or just good pitching, We're betting this. We know that. And right now, we're not going through a good stretch, We'll turn around.
Sox are back in action tonight for the second game of their doubleheader at 7:10 on the Shaw's and Star Market WEEI Red Sox Radio Network. Shaw's, perfecting the art of fresh. Joe Castiglione, Will Fleming, and Lou Merlone are on the call. Zach Kelly on the mound for the Sox, as Brad Foe just announced. And for the Blue Jays, it's Jose Barrios. John Lyons has the Mass Mutual pregame show at 6:10. Mass Mutual, insurance, planning, investments. Some other games to look out for around the MLB with wild card implications. Twins vs. Braves, Royals vs. Guardians. Drake May threw for 126 yards and a touchdown last night as the Patriots lost 13-20 to the Commanders. No announcement as to who will start game one of the regular season yet. However, Gerard Mayo said this morning on the Greg Hill Show.
We've maintained our stance that Jacoby was QB1, and early on, you could see that there was a huge gap between 1A and 1B, or I would say 2. But now that gap has definitely shrunk here over the last few weeks.
My name is Jacob Lassner, and that's what's trending on WEEI and WEEI.com.
For the first time, U.S. subscribers can stream MLB Network 24/7, including select out-of-market games.
Swing and a drive. It's deep. It's good. Yes!
Stream minor league affiliates.
Home run number one.
Or draft pick number one.
Plus, get MLB Big Inning and live audio for all 30 teams.
Baseball can't get better than this.
Experience the game like never before with MLB Network and At-Bat, your all-in-one baseball destination. Only $6.99 per month. Visit MLB.com/At-Bat for details. Blackout and other restrictions apply. MLB trademarks used with permission.
Red Sox lose 4-1 to the Blue Jays. Patriots lose 20-10 to the Commanders. But Drake May looked pretty good last night. I gave you my theory last segment on why I think he should still sit for a little while behind Jacoby Brissett to start the season. It has some to do with his development and some to do with a lot of the factors around him. And a guy who's going to help us break that down, a football expert, had been a head coach for many, many years, offensive line expert, as well as John Serenides of the New England Football Journal. He joins us now. John, always a pleasure to talk to you. How are you today?
Good, John. How you doing? I didn't realize I was an expert at so many things.
Yeah, hey, I can keep adding to the list if you want me to.
Feel free, but I'm telling you, I'm not that good at all those things.
Okay. Well, you know what? If anybody asks me, I'm just going to say that you are, okay, for the purposes of the show.
Please do. I appreciate it, my friend.
Sounds good. So, John, I want to just ask you the big question right up front. We've seen Drake May all summer. You've been down there covering the Patriots for the New England Football Journal every day. You've seen these preseason games. You saw the joint practice. You broke down his film extensively when he was coming out of North Carolina. Is he at a point, and are the Patriots at a point where Drake May, in your opinion, do you think he should be their week one starter?
Well, look, here's the thing. If it's a true quarterback competition, which is what we've been told off and on this offseason, then, yeah, he should be the week one starter. He outperformed Jacoby Brissett this preseason, specifically the last 2 weeks. But we know the reality. Their plan was never for him to be the starter week one. That was never in the cards. They never denied that there was a possibility he could play this year, but the plan was never for him to play week one. Now, all of a sudden, that's a possibility. Now, I'm with you. I don't think he should start week one despite his performance the last 2 weeks, but if it's a true competition, in theory, he's won that competition based on his play, and he should be the guy.
I want to follow up on something you said there, because you said, we've been told it's a competition, but you being down there every day, you saw it wasn't really a competition between the two. it feels like, John, there's been some mixed messaging coming out of Foxborough really ever since Gerard Mayo and Elliott Wolff took over. There's been a variety of things where they've kind of said one thing, then a few days later, a week later, a month later, said something kind of totally different. Or then there's been where Elliott says one thing, Gerard says something similar, but not quite on the same page. I mean, is this a concern for you? Like, is there real mixed messaging going on? Is it something, an issue with the team? Or is this, hey, two guys that are rookies in their respective positions just having some growing pains with the media?
I'm writing about this as we speak, and I'll have something up on it later on anyfootballjournal.com. But I am absolutely 100% concerned about it, John, because they're not on the same page. When they drafted me, the night of the draft, we were told that he's going to come in and be given the chance to compete because we want competition, but he needs to develop. And then we were told he's not quite there yet. He needs to develop. Jacoby's the guy. Then we were told they were competing. Then we were told by Alex Van Pelt last week that Jacoby's the guy. Now we're competing. They need to get on the same page. I think that this is bad for them internally, and I think this is a bad look from a PR standpoint for the organization. You can't go through this process and not be in sync. They have to be on the same page. They know that. But I think some of this, John, is a byproduct of the fact that you have an ownership group that kept Wolf. He was a Belichick guy. Mayo was a Belichick guy, too. Hired Mayo. So he didn't hire Mayo. They hired Mayo for him. And these guys, to your point about being a rookie executive and a rookie head coach, they're trying to figure it out amongst themselves, and they're trying to figure out a way to work together. And so far, it's played out in the public, whether it be the Matthew Judon situation or now this. They need to get their ducks in a row and figure this out, because right now they look like a Three Stooges operation, and that's not what you need while you're in the middle of trying to turn this thing around.
Yeah, and it's one of those things that, you know, can seem silly in the media when they contradict each other, or like when Gerard Mayo came on the Greg Hill show this morning and said something different than last night. But if that becomes what's happening in team meeting rooms or in practices, it's a major problem, John. I think, you know, it's a great point by you. And what do you think is the disagreement here, or the mixed message? Do you think Mayo wants to start May more than some others in the organization do, or vice versa? Do you think there is some sort of disagreement on what to do with Drake May?
There is disagreement, in my opinion, in terms of what they want to do with Drake May. Look, I think at one time they universally agreed that we need to develop him and do it right because we don't want Mac Jones 2.0. But I think he's thrown a wrench into that plan the last 2 weeks. And now all of a sudden, they're looking at this and saying, okay, how do we find a way to continue to develop him while we start Brissett and hope that Brissett has success and hope that the team has some success so that we can keep the fans off our backs and take the time we need to develop May? Because let's face it, I'm sure that Robert Kraft mandated, you're going to take a quarterback and you're going to develop him right, because I don't want another Mac Jones situation and I want a franchise guy. So knowing that, and that's a lot of pressure now on Wolf and Mayo and this offensive staff, knowing that there's pressure on him to develop him, but they also see the reality. He's the best quarterback in the building. The fact that Mayo sat there last night after that game and said that he's the second best quarterback on the team, that is ridiculous, and that discredits him. He loses credibility with the media and the fans when he says things like that. And it's disappointing because I think Gerard has a lot of strengths and he has the potential to be a good head coach in this league. But don't say things like that, because that discredits you as a coach. Everybody can see who the best quarterback in the building is. I think that's their conundrum. The kid has probably accelerated his timeline and they're trying to figure out how to handle it.
I want to switch gears to the offensive line now, John, because I think that has been the biggest issue, not just in this training camp, but all offseason. It's been one of the biggest flaws on the team, really, going back to 2020, besides quarterback play. So this offensive line, we saw illegal formation penalties, false start penalties, holding penalties, missed blocks. I mean, John, it feels to me like this offensive line is getting worse. And I know David Andrews wasn't there last night, and that's a huge part of it. But, I mean, am I overreacting when I say it feels like this is getting worse than where it was 2 or 3 weeks ago?
No, you're not overreacting at all. I agree with you 100%. It has been a problem for 4 years now. There has been no development there. I don't understand how it wasn't prioritized this offseason. Look, everybody wanted them to take a quarterback at three. So forget about the John Alt talk and them trading down, and that was bandied about during the pre-draft process. But everybody knew they were taking a quarterback at three. But I don't understand why they took Cain Walls in the third round. Fine. But they should have, and they might have, but based on what we know, they probably didn't make as much of a strong enough push to fortify this offensive line. And don't give me Chukwuma Okorafor. This isn't a knock on him or for Darian Lowe or anyone else that they're trotting out there to play tackle. But the bottom line is they have no tackles on this team, John. They had 10 penalties last night as a unit. 10. Four illegal formation penalties. Okay, Chukwuma Okorafor is not a left tackle. I know you had to play him there last night out of necessity, but he is not a left tackle. He is a right tackle, okay? And there's where your illegal formation penalties end up becoming a problem because he was misaligning. The other issue here is that physically, they're just not there, man. I mean, they were getting folded one-on-one in pass pro throughout the entire first half last night against their second and third teamers. We're not even talking about Deron Payne and Jonathan Allen, okay? So the offensive line is a major problem, and I think it's a big reason why ultimately they're going to opt to start Brissett against Cincinnati, and they're going to start with Brissett and try to play him as long as they can because they know as good as May is, they can't put him behind that offensive line right now. And by the way, all summer long, all we heard about was Scott Peters' strike system. Forget about the strike system. How about we start by them lining up and blocking who they're supposed to and competing physically? Then we'll worry about the strike system, okay? Enough with that nonsense. They need to get back to the basics and the fundamentals. But the bottom line is they're not going to fix this problem until next offseason. This is who they're going to be all year.
John, outside of Drake May, the Patriots have a lot of young players on this roster, specifically a rookie class they're expecting a lot out of. Now, based on what you've seen in training camp as well as these preseason games, what's your assessment of the rookie class besides Drake May?
Well, I think Jalen Polk right now is profiling as the number one receiver. I think, and I said this to you when we were there a couple weeks ago, I think he's their best receiver. He has been their best receiver all summer. I think he's profiling as that. I see a lot of Greg Jennings in his game. He's a little bit of a longer version, not as explosive, but a little bit of a longer version of Greg Jennings. I think he has the potential to develop into their best receiver. I think that with Javon Baker, it's been hit or miss. I think they're forcing it with him vertically. I think they need to start to use that size and that frame more inside the hashes. Pop Douglas has the big play potential, but you saw it last night, man. They throw a perimeter screen to him, and instead of catching the ball, hitting the alley and getting vertical, he starts running laterally. He's going to get himself hurt. And we've got people complaining about him returning punts. Never mind him returning punts. He needs to figure out how to run a perimeter screen because he's going to get hurt doing that. Never mind returning a kick. So I think he's got a ways to go in his development. I think for me, getting back to your original point with this class, I think Layden Robinson has competed, but you saw him last night. He's a little overmatched. I don't think we've seen enough out of Caden Wallace. So a lot of their success with this class, I think the focus is going to be those receivers, but I really think a lot of the success of this class outside of Drake May is going to be that offensive line because those guys are going to have to make more of an immediate impact. They're going to need Robinson and Wallace to come along a little quicker here because right now, they need them up front. They don't have enough. They need those guys to accelerate their development.
Last question here for you, John. In case we don't get the chance to have you on at any point in the next week and a half, can I get a quick season prediction for the Patriots?
Yeah, you know what? I think that this is a 5-12, 6-11 team. That's a tough 8-week stretch to open of season. It does soften up in the middle there and into the back end of the season, but this is a football team that has many of the same problems that they had last year. You're going to have to hope that Jacoby Brissett stays healthy and can play as long as possible so that May can develop. But I think ultimately this is a 5-12, 6-11 team at best. They just don't have enough offensively. They're a year away. We knew going into this year that it was going to be a bridge year. It's played out that way so far this preseason. And I think ultimately, if Jerod Mayo finds a way in year one to squeeze 6 wins out of this team, it's a good first step towards them turning things around.
All right. He is John Serenides of the New England Football Journal. John, always a pleasure talking to you. Have a good rest of your night.
Thanks, John. Appreciate the time. My brother will talk to you soon.
All right. That is John Serenides of the New England Football Journal. If you don't know them, folks, yeah, they have Patriots coverage, which I'm also a part of. I'm biased. It's pretty good. But New England high school and New England college football coverage.
Yeah, they do good coverage of BC athletics as well.
Yeah.
I know. I think Kevin Stone is a great reporter for them.
I know
for
Kevin
Boston
there.
College.
Yeah, Kevin does Patriots and Boston College stuff for them. He's tremendous, and him and John, as well as the rest of their staff, their high school football coverage, I think, is the best high school coverage in New England. They just do an awesome job promoting and covering local football. And John's a great football mind, so it's always a pleasure to have him on again. You can catch them at anyfootballjournal.com and the New England Football Journal on social media. So he said some interesting things there, Jacob. I thought the Three Stooges operation was a good one. But look, he's been down there every day. I've been down there a little bit. He's been down there every day. His point about, well, you can't really call it a competition when you declare one guy the starter midway through and don't really give the other guy a lot of legit first team reps. And don't get me wrong, you can still develop Drake May with second team reps. Like, he's still going to get better working with the second team. I mean, we've seen it, right? He's worked mostly with the second team this spring and summer, and he's gotten a lot better. But it's also not really a competition if you're not having him go with the same guys at the time. I mean, we saw last night, David Andrews is out, so he's with Nick Leverett, and it's a big difference, right? And that's the guy he's been with pretty much all spring and summer at center. So, again, I don't think it was ever a true – and who knows? You know, now that I said that live on the air, I'm sure, you know, they'll announce that May's the starter later. You know, that'll be my luck. But it just – for my eyes, and I was interested to hear John say that because he's been down there every day, that – it really hasn't been a true competition. But we got some calls. We got some texts. People wanting to talk Patriots. I'm also open to some Red Sox talk as well. We're in the middle of a Red Sox doubleheader. We got to take a break in a few minutes. But first, I want to get to Joe in Florida. He wants to talk some Patriots. Joe, welcome in. What do you got for us?
Well, I've been thinking the last week or two. We don't have John Hanner and Leon Gray walking in the building. We don't have Matt Light walking in the building with Logan Mankin. And given the Patriots' history, Jim Plunkett, first-round draft choice, destroyed going out there as a rookie. Tony Eason, who knows? He was destroyed. Let the kids sit and learn while they build an offensive line around them. That's all I got to say.
I appreciate the call, Joe, and it's a point I've been making for a while. It's a point I agree with from Joe, the caller there, in that, look, I'm not saying a rookie is never going to go into a perfect situation. Because if you were in a perfect situation, you wouldn't be drafting a rookie in the top five, right? So, like, let's be honest with ourselves. But there's a difference. Like, I went through those other situations, the Bears situations, the Commanders situation, the Broncos situation, all much more advantageous for a rookie quarterback than what you have in New England. That's not to say that this time next year, the Patriots can't be in a better situation than some of those teams, but I mean, let's be honest with ourselves, folks. Who's the Patriots' right tackle? Mike Onwenu, he's great. That means you're going to have a rookie, Layden Robinson, at right guard. Fine. I mean, hey, Layden Robinson, I believe in the guy. I think he's going to be good, but it is a rookie there. David Andrews is your center. As we've seen, you have no depth behind him. I mean, when Cole Strange comes back there, I've seen some reports out there, they might move him to center when he comes back, or at least get him some time there in case Andrews goes down. That's how desperate they're going to be. Guy who is coming off a serious injury, who hasn't even played that well as a guard the last couple of years, they might move to at least a backup center role, because they're that desperate. City So, who I thought down the stretch of last year played really well. If you're into PFF and some of those advanced numbers, I think in the last five games of the year, he had two grades over 80, which by their grading system is really good. So he made progress last year, but he got hurt last night. And then left tackle, I mean, look, I'm not trying to be rude here, but how many times at a training camp practice or in a preseason game did I see somebody just run right by Vadarian Lowe? And now he's out. And you have a Okorafor there who can't line up right. And John Serenides of the New England Football Journal, who joined us earlier, he made a great point. Well, that's because he's used to playing right tackle his whole career. And look, can that be fixed? Yes, it can be fixed. But you have a guy who hasn't called plays in Alex Van Pelt since 2009, 15 years, and you have all those issues I just mentioned. Like, I know no situation for a rookie quarterback is good. I get it. But you don't. Do you really want to put a rookie who has the potential to be great, I believe that,
in that situation right away? I mean, what difference is it really going to make if you wait until week five? And I know there's people saying, well, is it really going to be better in week five? Yeah, it actually can be better in week five. And by the way, let's be clear. Better does not equate to good, okay? Just because I said it'd be better doesn't mean they're going to be good. But better might be you line up right. Better might be the running backs and the tackles can communicate, because we've now seen a couple weeks in a row. Let's not forget last week, the Drake May sack, when Vidarian Lowe had help on the edge from a running back and they miscommunicated and the defensive end went right inside and got Drake May. And then you have last night when two offensive linemen run into each other, the running back misses a block and the defensive end goes around the edge and smokes Brissett. Almost said a bad word there. Smokes Brissett. Like, so again, that's like that can be fixed in 5 weeks. Van Pelt in 4 or 5 weeks can figure out what he's comfortable with. Like, and all those are major, major things. And those are things that the Broncos don't have to worry about with Bo Nix. The Bears don't have to worry about with Caleb Williams. And at least to a large extent, the Commanders don't have to worry about as much, I guess at least, with Chayne and Daniels. So, I mean, that's the thing. And there's also things Drake May can still get better at, much like he's gotten better since April. We're going to keep this conversation going. I'm going to take you up to a little bit after 6 o'clock. Then I'm going to have Red Sox pregame coverage. So any calls or texts you want to send in, 617-779-7937. Between now and about 6:05, I'll be on the air before Red Sox pregame. So in the next 20 minutes, Patriots, Red Sox, whatever you want to get to, things in life, I don't care. Just join us. Be happy to have you. But we'll be right back. Going to take a quick break right now.
Back here on WEEI, I'm John Lyons. Taking you up to about 6:05. Then I'm going to have Red Sox pregame right after that. So any calls or texts you want to get in on the Patriots, Drake May, Gerard Mayo, or the Red Sox between now and 6:05, get them in. I'll also be here for Red Sox review after the game. So you're stuck with me for a while on WEEI tonight. But you get a Red Sox game in the middle, so you get a break from me, so that's all right. Like I said, Red Sox, Patriots, I'm game for anything this final segment. Whatever you got, let's go to, we have Mason in the car. Mason, welcome into the program. What do you got for us?
What's up, homie? Good to hear you in the afternoon. Yeah, it's funny. The Patriots just find themselves in an awful dilemma when it comes to the quarterback situation. Obviously, you know, we're not going to go revisionist history and say they should have traded down and taken offensive line instead of Drake May. Some might. I'm not going to. But, you know, you don't build on the O-line. And obviously in a preseason game against backups, Jacoby Brissett goes down. What's going to happen against Nick Bosa or someone like this? Do you dare play Drake May? Or do you have to do Zappy or that Milton dance? Like, it's so confusing. And I don't have an answer for you. Like, it's a strange dilemma they find themselves in.
They certainly do, Mason. Thank you for the call. And, yeah, I mean, Mason mentioned Nick Bosa, who might be the best individual pass rusher in the NFL. Best defensive line they're probably going to face all year in San Francisco. But don't look now. Cincinnati has Trey Hendrickson in a pretty good pass rush. The Jets in week three, top three or four defense. I mean, look, Quinton Williams in the middle, he's pretty freaking awesome, folks. I mean, I know everyone focuses on Aaron Rodgers and all the dumb stuff the Jets do, but that defensive line is the real deal. Now, I know they got rid of Bryce Huff. They have that Hassan Reddick situation hanging out there. If he plays, he's pretty good too. So, and then week two, Seattle, look, I'm not as scared of their defensive line as I would be the Jets or the 49ers after, but Mike McDonald's been known to bring a lot of unique pressures to the table when he was in Baltimore. Now, he was working with a different cast of characters, but just something to be aware of now that he's out in Seattle. So, yeah, I mean, Mason in the car there, he made a good point. And John Serenides made this point earlier on this program. It wasn't just that the Patriots offensive line got pushed around last night. They got pushed around by some backups. And even, look, the joint practice against Philadelphia, I was there and I watched Philly's starters push the Patriots offensive line around. Then in the preseason game, I saw some better moments, but I still saw some moments of that against backups in the preseason game. But I still, again, there were some better moments in that Eagles preseason game. But last night, there wasn't. And it's like Mason said, look, I would not have traded down to get a tackle or other guys instead of Drake May. I think, look, if they needed a quarterback that bad, if they believe May's the guy, it's worth it at three. I look at free agency, and I'm not sitting here telling you there was a bunch of elite tackles available in free agency. But like the one that stands out to me, Jonah Williams, 2 years, $30 million to Arizona. Now, last year he played right tackle, was all right at right tackle. The 2 years before that, he played left tackle.
2022, he was kind of below average, still better than what you have now. But 2021, he was a really good left tackle. He was the 25th overall tackle by PFF in the NFL. That includes left and right. He had some games where he was one of the better tackles in the league. Still a young player. I mean, I'd much rather you sign Jonah Williams, a guy who has multiple seasons, over a couple thousand snaps playing left tackle, than a Okorafor, who hadn't even played left tackle. And I say, look, I like Caden Wallace. You want to draft him, that's fine. But I just don't understand, like, why would you, at probably the second most important position on the field, quarterback number one, left tackle number two, at the second most important position, not have an answer? And really, we're talking multiple years in a row. Because Trent Brown last year had some moments, but he was really inconsistent. And by the end, he didn't want to be here. You knew this was coming. And you didn't have an answer for Trent Brown last year, which is why you had to stick around so long, even after he quit. So now you come into this offseason. And again, I'm not sitting here telling you there's some amazing option. Like, Tyron Smith got a one-year deal. Yeah, he's on the back nine of his career. He'd still be a better fit than Okorafor. I mean, like, what are we talking about here? Like, Jonah Williams, 2 years, $30 million. If it doesn't work out, would I sit here and say, oh, hey, that didn't work out, that was a bad signing? Yeah. But is that a much better signing to go after than Okorafor? I mean, at least Williams has played the position and has evidence of him playing it at a high level. And he was a first-round pick, too. The talent's there. I mean, I'd much rather have Jonah Williams vying for the left tackle spot on this team than Okorafor and Vadarian Lowe. I think if you watch those guys, you would, too. So, I mean, that's the spot they're in. And the unfortunate thing is, like, Gerard Mayo made the point that, okay, we signed the best offensive line in free agency in Mike Onwenu. I agree. I think Mike Onwenu was the best offensive lineman in free agency, and they signed him. That's a good thing. Doesn't solve your left tackle issue, though. It solves your right tackle and or right guard issue, whichever place you want to put Onwenu at. But doesn't solve left tackle. And now you're at a point where you haven't even gotten good right tackle play, so you had to move Onwenu out there, and now you have a rookie at right guard. Which, again, I'm not saying Layden Robinson is, you know, a bad player, but you saw last night he had some inconsistent moments. He had some good reps. Then he did some bad stuff out there. He's a rookie. He's a fourth-round pick. You're starting him out there. I'm not shocked that that's going to happen. And that's the other thing. I mean, Michael Hawley had this quote. Chris Scheim and I played it last week about there's just a lot of new guys involved with this, not just this football team, but specifically this offense. And that's a bad recipe for a rookie quarterback, having that many new guys. It's never going to be a perfect situation for a rookie quarterback, because if it was, you wouldn't need a rookie quarterback. But there's also a line where it's like, okay, this goes from not being a perfect situation to a flat-out bad situation that could hinder his development. And like I said last segment, oh, what could happen in 4 or 5 weeks? A lot that can make a positive difference in 4 or 5 weeks. Again, continue with your call, 617-779-7937. Love to hear from you on Patriots or Red Sox. Got about a few more minutes here before we go to Red Sox pregame. Jacob, what do we got on the text? I've seen a lot of texts come in. What do we got on the text line?
So we have, can't understand why Patriots fans think that starting Brissett, they should be expecting success. No, the idea is to get your franchise quarterback not to be hurt with your terrible offensive line, because you're not expected to make the playoffs. Winning 4 or 5 games in the first half of the season is not necessarily success.
Yeah, and that's an 860 texter. Thank you very much for listening. If they win 4 or 5 games in the first half of the season, I might fall off this chair. I will be ecstatic. I'm a Patriots fan. I'll love it. I'll just be shocked. And look, yeah, that's the thing. Like, look, if we're being realistic here, I think a lot of this, there's two major messages the Patriots organization gave us this offseason. Message number one, everything that happened last year and the year before was the fault of Bill Belichick and Mac Jones. And I've gone through this before. I don't need to go through the whole thing now. But if you look at what they did, they fired Bill, they traded Mac, and yet they kept a lot of the other same players around. They promoted one of Bill's assistants to be a head coach. They promoted one of Bill's assistants to be the executive vice president of player personnel, and Elliott Wolf. They offered all of Bill's coaches to stay on the staff this year. There were reports in Sports Illustrated that they were going to empower a, quote, frustrated scouting staff. All those signals are telling us, hey, we think this was Bill's fault, this was Mac's fault, and that's why they're gone. So that was message number one. Message number two they gave us, again, without really saying it, is this season is more about 2025 than 2024. Now, that's not great for ratings. That's not great for, you know, people going to the games and buying tickets. That's why they're not saying it out loud. But look what they've done. They've constructed an offense to develop a young quarterback who probably isn't going to play right away. And they've brought in a rookie receiver in Jalen Polk, who I think is probably a long-term number two receiver, but maybe could be a number one, and they're developing him to be a primary option. They did not address left tackle, and they're really at a point where, with this schedule, it feels like they're and they have a rookie head coach. They're telling us, hey, everything that happened before was Bill and Mac's fault. We're going to take a year to build this thing back up. We'll be better in 2025. And I think you're going to see them in 2025. And look, they made an effort after Brandon Ayuk. I'll give them, they at least made an effort. I'll give them credit. They made an effort after Calvin Ridley. But I think next year you'll see them actually get one of those guys, get a top-end receiver, or get a legit left tackle, unless Caden Wallace somehow develops into one. But that's what it's going to be. And again, that's what they're doing right now. It's just they haven't said that out loud because it's probably not good for their brand. But those are the two main messages I've gotten from this offseason from the organization. Jacob, what else we got on the...
Trying to figure out what to eat for dinner yet again? With Norse sides and bouillon as your not-so-secret ingredient, you can skip the drive-thru and do dinner at home. Nor taste combos provide a menu of delicious, affordable, and well-balanced meals that you can prepare in 30 minutes or less. Visit nor.com to get quick and easy recipe ideas for your home-cooked weeknight dinners. It's not fast food, but it's so good.
For the first time, U.S. subscribers can stream MLB Network 24/7, including select out-of-market games.
Swing and a drive. It's deep. It's good. Yes!
Stream minor league affiliates.
Home run number one.
Or draft pick number one.
Plus, get MLB Big Inning and live audio for all 30 teams.
Baseball can't get better than this.
Experience the game like never before with MLB Network and At-Bat, your all-in-one baseball destination. Only $6.99 per month. Visit MLB.com/At-Bat for details. Blackout and other restrictions apply. MLB trademarks used with permission.